morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of TBS EFM's Inside Out. I'm your host, Walter Foreman. Well, Thursday marked the 568th Hangul Day, the day honoring the Korean alphabet. And Hangul is called by many linguists one of the most scientific or ingenious writing systems ever devised. It was invented by King Sejong the Great of the Joseon Dynasty in the 15th century, and this writing system has been garnering worldwide attention these days for its excellence and efficiency. Today, we've invited a guest who appreciates Hangul and Korean literature, as he took it upon himself to become a global ambassador for Korean literature. His name is Charles Montgomery, a professor at Dongguk University and editor of Korean Modern Literature in Translation. He'll tell us about his love for Korean literature, how that began, and what efforts he's making to promote it to the outside world. I'm your host, Walter Foreman. Stay tuned. And welcome back. Thanks for staying with us. And a good morning to you, sir. Thanks for joining us, Charles.
Good morning to me. I'm happy to be here, Walter.
And we should, of course, say Professor Montgomery, give you the kudos that you deserve, sir.
I think that's okay. with respect to Hangul, at least, I'd say I'm knowledgeable, but not a professor.
All right. Fair enough indeed. Now, I'd say that we're sort of going through a bit of a festive atmosphere this weekend because, of course, Thursday was the holiday. Maybe some people getting the so-called sandwich day in there on the Friday, having the Friday off. And here we are Saturday morning. And so that's why we've had you on the show, of course, to talk about Hangul. As I mentioned in the introduction, many linguists, they praise the excellence of Hangul, the Korean alphabet. Tell us your opinion, because you, of course, are very well versed in literature, in translation, so you're dealing with the alphabet on some levels. Tell us about your opinions of Hangul.
I think, in fact, that initially, particularly in 1443 or so, when Hangul was literally invented, it in fact was one of the most scientific languages, and it still is one of the most ingenious. A short background for our listeners who don't know.
Sure.
Prior to that time, you spoke in Korean. Mm-hmm. There was a Korean language,
sure,
the same language that Hangul represents,
yeah,
but you had to use Chinese Hanja that sounded similar to the sounds that you were trying to make,
right,
in Korean. And so what this did is this separated society into two groups. This is a slight oversimplification, but the Yeongbon, who had learned Hanja, the Chinese language, and consequently could discuss high literature and could write books.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the entire rest of Korea, which was speaking native Korean, but had no way to write it down. There literally was no way to write down a thought you had in Korean,
right,
other than to become educated in Chinese, learn, and then Hyeongchal was the name, and Yidu was the name for that system, depending on era. So it was King Sejong's ingenuity was to look at that and say, this is just not a situation that a proud state should be in.
Sure.
A proud state should be in a situation in which its people can speak and write its language in an indigenous alphabet. And so he set about the project to do that. And as you also mentioned, scientific. Initially, it was quite scientific. Again, as listeners may not know, the letters of the alphabet are based on the shape of the mouth, the tongue, the,
right,
palate,
right,
the lips, etc. So it was revolutionary, and to my knowledge is the only, its other distinction is, to my knowledge, it is the only fully created alphabet, national alphabet,
mm-hmm,
ever in history.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I certainly can't think of another, and I have certainly had some involvement with the study of language on a few levels, not nearly as in-depth as you have, and thank you for that sort of background on it. For me, what I really like about Hangul is that it's very consistent. I mean, when you look at English and a word like enough,
mm-hmm,
why on earth is enough pronounced enough when you have those combinations of letters,
yes,
together? But in Hangul, once you learn that the miyum is an M sound and,
right,
the shiot is an S sound, there's almost never any variation.
And even when there are variations, the variations are
logical.
Universal. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
They are to make the word that you're speaking a sound more easy to pronounce, essentially.
Right, right.
I mean, there's the classic thing I teach in my basic classes, my conversation classes, that G-H-O-T-I, those letters.
G-H-O-T-I.
In English, spell fish, just as you say. G-H
right,
from
right,
enough.
Right, right.
O from women and T-I from emotion. Fish,
right,
of
right.
course.
Yeah.
And so Hangul really gets around a lot of those problems. And this is where that famous claim comes that you can learn Hangul in 3 hours.
Right.
Because basically you can learn it well enough to read it, and you can learn it well enough to slowly pronounce it.
Sure.
In a very quick amount of time. The trick comes, as I've learned in my staggering learning of Korean, is that Koreans, like every other nationality, speak quickly that when the sounds go together, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, you have like the maybe some reductions, I think they're called by the linguists, where the sounds do change a little bit in the quick spoken language. But I mean, even if you're not speaking it quickly as a learner of Korean, you know, if you're just making the proper sounds, no one's going to hold that against you. And the sounds, of course, are always or almost always the same. When you said G-H-O-T-I, I was thinking Gaudi, and I was thinking of John Gaudi, the famous mafia boss.
Entirely different.
Entirely different.
Although if you mess with John Gotti, you may famously end up sleeping with
the fishes. Very
so,
nice. Well done on a Saturday morning. Now, you of course, are well known for the work you do with the Korean literature in translation, your blog, Korean modern literature in translation. So let's maybe shift a little bit away from Hangul itself, although I'm sure we'll come back to it, and talk about really where your expertise lie, and that's in Korean literature. How did your interest in that first begin?
My interest in that first began when I met a Korean man in the United States.
Makes sense.
My best friend is Korean. He was taking a comparative literature degree at the University of California at Berkeley. And as many Koreans at the time, he could read and write English very well, but his spoken Korean was not... His spoken English was not at the level he wanted it to be.
Okay.
So he came to work for me as a tutor in our English lab, realizing that if you teach English to people, particularly our clientele was largely Vietnamese and Hispanic students with different kinds of accents, that if he could learn to navigate that in terms of spoken English, he would be fine. We became best friends. He introduced me to Samgyeopsal and Soju. He then introduced me to Korean literature. He's a translator, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Well, then you've taken that interest in literature and you've really parlayed that, I think, into a career here in Korea. Now, if we talk about literature, and I honestly don't know if you can answer this question because of your position, but let me try anyway. Do you have a favorite Korean author?
I have several favorite Korean authors. I have a personal favorite Korean author, Kim Jong-ha, Kim Jong-ha, as he's pronounced in English, and he's one of my favorite writers just because I've met him. But then I've also met some writers who are just amazing. I mean, not met. I mean met in the sense that I know who they are.
In the literary sense.
Yeah, in the literary sense. Hwang Soon-wan, who I refer to as the Dickens of Korea. Every Korean who is listening to this and many foreigners will know the story Sonagi. He wrote the famous Sonagi. It's been turned into a drama. It's been turned into an everything. He wrote The Descendants of Cain. I like Kyung Suk Shin because she made a certain kind of literature famous. She made it clear to the world that Amy Tan type literature could exist, and then in her second book she made it clear that deeply thought personal interpersonal literature could be written. I like Ko Un because Ko Un and Nobel Prize issues always float around, but one of the great things about Ko Un is when you read Ko Un you don't need special understanding. It doesn't hurt. In fact, it helps. But you don't need special understanding of Korean culture to appreciate his poetry. So my list is long, and right now there are two publishing companies that are each year putting out at least 10 books each with modern writers. And so now there's an entire list of modern writers who I'm just falling in love with.
Well, that sort of leads me very nicely to my next question. I mean, you mentioned these authors. You mentioned Kim Jong-ha.
Kim Jong-ha.
But Ha.
I'm elating it. Yeah.
Okay.
Kim Jong-ha.
All right. Kim Jong-ha. You mentioned Kyung Suk Shin. You mentioned Go Eun, of course. Are these then authors that have already been translated? So, I mean, are any of our English-speaking listeners, could they go out and find versions of works by these authors that are already translated into English?
Yes, three works by Shin Kyung-suk, Hwang Soon-wan, many, many works. I recommend beginning with The Descendants of Cain, and Kim Jong-ha, Kim Jong-ha, I'm sorry, is now famous enough internationally so that I think everything, when he is done with a work, I think the translation begins on it.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's reached
he's
that.
He's got some of that gravitas. That,
yeah,
that
he's
stature.
Reached that state. He's, wow. So yeah, those, one of the other things that, one of the projects that I'm working on that I hope to complete next week is a work about Korean modern literature. It's actually going to be sort of book-ish, mm-hmm. but one of the features it's going to have is every single work it refers to for the reader mm-hmm. is translated and currently available in English. So
right.
if you want to learn Korean literature through history, including pre-modern literature, mm-hmm. I don't talk about authors you cannot find.
Very, I think that's a very wise way of going about it, because if you end up piquing someone's interest in a particular genre, a particular work, or a particular author, and then if that interest can't be sort of, if you can't really quench that thirst for it in English, if the person can't speak or read Korean, then you're really not going anywhere.
Right, and that was my first experience with the histories of particularly pre-modern Korean literature. I'd read this stuff and I'd go, oh, great, I've got to go read blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
And then I'd find that it only existed in Korean and I was dead-ended.
Yeah, so you have the excitement and then you want to fulfill that and then you really can't. It's really a letdown. And that could be sort of maybe one of the roadblocks to Korean literature sort of being more known around the world. So it's good to know that there are a lot of these authors out there already translated into English. We'll maybe give our listeners a break. They can look them up on the internet, find where they can get them, but they can come back and join us for more in our conversation with Professor Charles Montgomery right after this short break.
How are you enjoying the program so far? If you want to listen again to the show, you can use the smartphone application iBlog.com and search Inside Out or visit insideout.iBlog.com. For more information about each week's program, visit our TBS EFM website, tbsefm.seoul.kr.
And we are back this morning with our guest today, Professor Charles Montgomery, writer, editor, and professor at Dongguk University. Thanks for staying with us, Professor.
My pleasure.
Well, we were talking about your interest in Korean literature, your favorite authors, and I think it's one thing to appreciate the literature, which you obviously do very much, but then you've gone another step, and you've gone towards promoting it. And you do that in many ways, but one of the ways in which you do that is through your blog, Korean Modern Literature in Translation. Tell us about the blog. How did it get started? And I guess where can people find it?
Well, first of all, the address is simple. It is www.ktlit.com. And initially, it actually got started because I've been involved in education for quite a long time, and one of the truisms of education is that you can never truly understand something as well as if you try to explain or teach it.
Sure.
And so this blog became a place for me where after I had read Korean literature and translation, I could respond to it and try to make sense of it.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, even though I do not go back and edit articles from the past,
mm-hmm.
I go back and look at some of the original stuff, and
yeah.
I just cringe at my misunderstandings.
But, ultimately, that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it shows how far you've come.
It worked for me. Some of the other things I've done is I've worked on various things with LTI Korea over
mm-hmm.
on the south side of the river. Has in the last couple of years, the last few directors particularly, have been very forward-looking and have been interested in projects and working on books, online video contests, essay contests.
Mm-hmm.
We did the Wikipedia project where we put 250 Korean authors up onto the web so that people, that thing we were talking about, running into the dead end, didn't happen. When
mm-hmm.
you found a Kyung Suk Shin, or when you found a Chae Yun, or when you found an Imunyol, you could do what Westerners do. And what Westerners do is Westerners go to Google,
mm-hmm.
and Google returns one of two things. It either returns the canonical name,
mm-hmm.
so if I had charlesmontgomery.com, it would return my name,
yep.
or if there's a Wikipedia page, it returns the Wikipedia page.
Right. Yeah,
so
they're always high up there.
Right. It's 1, 2, or 3 if it exists. And so the Wikipedia, it occurred to me that this was a terrible gap, because if somebody liked Shin Kyung-suk's Omaru Putake, Please Look After Mom, for instance,
mm-hmm.
it would be nearly impossible, in fact, really impossible unless they lived in Korea, for them to learn that she had also already written and published Where the Harmonium Once Stood, a shorter story that talked about similar issues. So even if that author wanted to like Shin Kyung-suk's work, that reader would be stuck, could not find it. And so it started with that. About a year later, LTI Korea said, you know what, we have a lot of resources and we have people who can do this in multiple languages. Sure. Let's go for this whole hog. And so we did. So I work with them on things like that. I do things like this. I speak whenever I can. I've spoken in Malaysia in Islamic National University. I'm working with a group of international fans of Korean literature. There's a guy named Tony in Australia. There's a guy named Philip in UK. And we'd like to do an online month about Korean literature with various projects. So basically it's anything that comes to my mind. And in my previous life, I was a marketing director.
Okay, well, that helps.
Yeah, so these kind of things.
Well, you know, I'm going to go to a question here that maybe somewhat is contrary to what we were saying earlier. We were talking earlier about Hangul. After all, we did celebrate Hangul Now, Hangul Day on Thursday. And we were saying how sort of scientific it is, how ingenious it is. And I agree with both of those, of course. We also said how there are very few linguistic exceptions. And again, I agree. But one area where there is some exceptions is in names, in the spelling of the names and the use of the names. And it's actually already happened to us this morning. We've been talking about Shin Kyung-suk, and we've been talking about Kyung-suk Shin.
And she prefers in English Kyung-suk Shin.
Right.
Yeah.
Shin
However,
being the family name.
Right. So when she publishes in English, she wants one name.
Right.
When she publishes in Korean, she wants the traditional name, starting family name.
Right. So exactly my question, as a former marketing manager and someone who's taken it upon himself to promote Korean literature to the world, how do you handle those variations in names, not only in the positioning of the names, but also the spellings? Because there are different ways to spell Shin or Kyung or Suk.
So a couple of different things. One, it's a massive problem.
Yeah.
When I got here, there were 12 or 13 different romanizations of Park Won-se. So you simply could not find all of her works.
Right.
This does not seem to be a problem in other countries. Other countries settle on canonical spellings for their authors, and away they go.
Yeah.
Japan is a good example of that. One way to get around this, actually, strangely, and in which we have gotten around this, is the Wikipedia project.
Okay.
Because Wikipedia has a little hidden area at the bottom where you can put in all the romanizations you want. And if someone searches for those romanizations, they will get that page. So you can search for any of those Park Won-se romanizations and still get that Wikipedia page with her information.
Right.
But that is still a massive, that is a massive problem in terms of marketing.
Sure.
Because if you can't find all the works of the author, you're stuck. You get to a point and you just don't know that they're out there.
Well, there's some good advice maybe for any aspiring Korean literature authors. Settle on a standardized spelling of your name. Make sure that that is the spelling that's always used and be consistent with it.
And in fact, again, to talk about the Literature Translation Institute of Korea, they have started to create a database that is intended to be the definitive database of romanizations of Korean author names into English. And they've done this with live authors by contacting them, and with authors who are, I'm not quite sure how they've done it with deceased authors, probably through the family, but they are trying to narrow this down so we can find it. If there's one more thing I could say about Hangul, though, because we mentioned Kyung-suk Shin, or in Korea, Shin Kyung-suk.
Right.
One of the brilliant things that Hangul did, since we're celebrating Hangul Day, is Hangul, when that alphabet was created, it made it possible for women to write.
Hmm.
It made it possible for poor people to write.
Yeah.
And you think of it sometimes as Yongbun versus the rest of Korean society at that time during the Joseon Dynasty. But at that time, women simply could not write. And so Hangul was sometimes also known as the language of the inner rooms, where the women lived. And so one of the really powerful things that the creation of Hangul has done for Korean literature is it has brought female authors into the literature game to such an extent that I would guess now you have at least a 50-50 split.
Okay.
Recognized authors and poets, men and women.
Right.
And without Hangul, prior to 1443, this simply would not have been possible.
Well, it's a very good point that you make, and certainly going back to 1443, it was a sort of a great, maybe even liberator for many people, the regular class, and then within the regular class, as you mentioned, particularly the females there. But to give it more of a modern perspective, I'll give you a personal account. I was trying to do some research on the 88 Summer Olympics here in Seoul, and I was quite surprised looking at sort of the old microfiche and even what are online scans of newspapers of the day. You know, I have some knowledge of Korean, especially maybe reading it. I would guess that 60 to 70% of the text in 1988, 1989, that I was reading in newspapers, Korean newspapers, was still, even at that time, in Hanja, Chinese characters.
And this is really funny because authors do that too. Mm. It is still considered a sign, whether right. it will be formally admitted or not, it right. is still considered a sign of intellectual ability.
Sure, sure.
In the same way that in the 17th and 18th century, one author might say disparagingly of another author, he has some Latin and only a little Greek.
Right, right, right. Right?
And so there is, you know, there is, Hanja does still exist. It would be foolish yeah. to ignore its existence. And it exists to a much larger extent in written form mm-hmm. than in spoken form.
Right.
But I also believe it's decreasing for two reasons. One, because the kids, so to speak, my students don't
yes.
know it.
Yeah.
And second, because of the unbelievably radical speed at which Hangul can change, because of the way that Hangul is set up with the individual syllables mm-hmm. and how you can combine syllables.
Mm-hmm.
Hangul changes faster than probably any language in the world. My
right.
friend Ed comes to Korea every 3 or 4 years and he has to learn new language. This does not, when I go back to the United States, I do not have to learn a new word.
Exactly.
He came here and someone mentioned chimek,
mm-hmm.
chicken and beer,
right.
as a meal possibility.
Yeah.
He was like, what is chimek?
Well, exactly. It's that shortening. I mean,
yeah.
the syllables or the characters, phonemes, if you will, I'm not sure what to call them, but they can be combined. So when we take something like chimek, of course, comes from chicken, mekju, and that gets shortened. And I think that really lends itself to the sort of technology of the day, the methods of communications that we're using, you know, the short messaging systems, these social networks that only allow so many characters. Of course, that really doesn't play much of a role in literature, maybe, but in certain, you know, in communication, absolutely.
It's beginning to play a role in literature because you're beginning to see things written in a much shorter style, and you're beginning to see stories like No One Writes Back by Jung Eun-jin, which is written in a literary style, but suggests maybe that writing in a literary style is kind of going away and is losing its meaning. And in fact, Koreans have gone, not just have they done this with Hangul, they've done this with emoticons and emoji
right.
in a way that no other country has. You can have a conversation with just letters, practically.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. It's very, very interesting. It's apropos that we're talking about it here just a few days after Hangul Day. We're going to talk a lot more with our guest today, Professor Charles Montgomery, after this break.
Number one foreign language station. Coming to you from the heart of Seoul. 101.3 TBS EFM.
And welcome back to this, I guess we could call it special edition for Hangul Day. Of course, it was a few days ago, but we're celebrating it here today, this Saturday, on TBS EFM's Inside Out. I'm your host, Walter Foreman, joined by our guest today, Professor Charles Montgomery. Hello, sir.
Glad to be here, Walter.
Well, I think we really set the stage for a lot of things in that first part of the interview that I'd like to come on to here in the second part. And one of them is translation, because mm-hmm. that's sort of where you live and breathe.
Right.
Let's talk about the translation of Korean literature, and let's just start very broadly with how's it going. I mean, have we seen advances? Is it being done better? Is it being picked up by different publishing houses? It's a general question, but it'll get us started. How's it going?
It's going much better for a variety of reasons. The first reason is there's a new generation of translators. If you look back through translation. Translation really starts in about the 1970s and 80s when the Peace Corps comes. And every decade or so, there's been a new generation of translators. So one, there's a new generation of translators. Two, the method by which the translators are chosen has changed. It used to be translators essentially chose themselves, right? There were people who were interested in this, who had time.
Right.
At night, they had nothing to do. Now the translations are much more being chosen either by the authors or by the publishers for appropriateness,
okay,
for who they work with. And then the third thing that's happening is you're seeing more and more live authors being translated, which means that the live author and the translator can actually have some kind of relationship. And I was just listening. I believe it was Hwang Sung-yok last 2 weekends ago who said that. And I also happen to know that, for instance, Chi Young Kim, who has been one of the most successful translators, she translated Please Look After Mom.
Mm-hmm.
She translated A Toy City by Yi Dong Ha. She translated Your Republic Is Calling You by Kim Young Ha. And in all those cases, she worked with the author, because there has been a long-standing struggle in translation. Should we be literal, meaning should we translate the words,
yeah,
or should we be ideational? Should we translate what we feel the content to be?
Sure.
And there seems to be a growing agreement that although we should be as literal as we can, it is more important to get the ideas through. And so things have just changed. There's a Korean writing that Shin Kyung-suk, you'll notice I used her Korean style.
Miss Shin.
Yes. So Shin Kyung-suk, when she writes in Korean, she writes in a very Korean discursive style,
mm-hmm,
where oftentimes you will read for a page and a half, before she arrives at the point of what she has been talking about.
Right.
This is very, very standard Korean style.
Yeah, yeah.
Starting with anecdotes, quoting people, then at the end saying something. When that was retranslated, it was retranslated so that was inverted.
Okay.
The words weren't changed.
Mm.
The order was changed.
Interesting.
And things were added.
So the point came first.
Yeah, so the point came first, because Westerners are kind
we
of...
We want that.
Yeah, we want
Where's
that. Unless we're post-modern... yeah, right. Unless we're post-modern readers, we're for that. So, but probably the most important thing is the new generation. There's a generation of translators like Sora Kim Russell,
mm-hmm,
and Jenny Wang Medina, who
mm-hmm
have been brought up in both cultures and really have a good understanding of cultural meanings in both cultures. So that would extend to idioms and references, because one of the hardest things to do when you translate, if I translate the phrase the son of Star Wars,
mm-hmm,
it could be translated literally just to mean, you know, the child,
yes,
of fights in outer space,
yeah,
when in fact, when you look at it carefully, it was a kind of a gag take, a sort of insulting way of describing a politician's thing. And so you have to be able to bring that meaning through. And the new translators are just getting better and better and better at doing that. And then also, for whatever reason, and I can't tell you why this is, the new translators are becoming, seem to me, more literate in English.
Mm.
They write more flowing, more easy, more understanding, more literate English.
Well, there's kudos for the English education system here in Korea. I hope that's got something to do with it. And I'd certainly agree, for the last point at the very least, and I'd certainly agree with everything that you said. When you mentioned Son of Star Wars, you know, my eyes rolled back and I was thinking, Son of Star Wars, Son of Star Wars. And I thought you were talking about J.J. Abrams.
Well, see, right. So when somebody, but that's exactly part of the point too. When someone in English reads that, all of these meanings and implications come flying into their head.
Yep.
When you translate that, you have to figure out how to get as many of those in without like writing an entire paragraph, then explaining.
Yeah, footnotes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Which I hate.
Of course. And everyone hates footnotes.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at more historical translations back through the 70s, the 80s, maybe even the 90s, you saw a lot of footnotes.
Yeah.
And when you look at more modern translations, at least the ones I see, there are fewer footnotes.
Right.
And I think that, at least to me, signifies a shift from sort of the translation for academia to the translation for enjoyment, for literature, for the sake of the content rather than just academia.
And Walter, you put your point on something, you put your finger on a point that's so important, I can't believe I haven't said it yet. The other shift, and that I missed it in your previous question, the other shift is the shift from translation for academic reasons,
mm-hmm.
that is books that go in libraries and universities and gather dust,
yep.
to books that are being translated to sell for people
sure.
to read.
Right.
And the footnote is the academic style, the explanatory style.
Yep.
When Please Look After Mom came out, there was never going to be a footnote in that.
No.
It was a monster success.
Well, that was in Oprah's book club, was it not?
It was. It was chosen as one of Oprah's books.
Yeah.
And so that shift alone has been massive, and that shift has to do with publishers.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with which publisher you choose, because if you choose a publisher like Random House, and I think Random House was the publisher for Please Look After Mom,
mm-hmm.
you know the book is being chosen for sale. But if you pick certain other publishing houses, which I won't name because I'm too polite, you know that those books are being intended for university students to read in
right.
the study of Korean studies,
yeah.
in their Asian studies program, and then put back on the library shelf and never read again. And those books, to me, are useful for education, but useless for literature.
Well, and after all, that's what we are talking about today. We are talking about the literature, and we're talking about that literature in translation. And, of course, that involves the Korean alphabet, Hangul, which was celebrated just a few days ago. We are joined by our guest today, Professor Charles Montgomery. He is a writer, he's an editor, and he is a professor at Dongguk University. And he'll be back with more of our conversation today after this short break.
How are you enjoying the program so far? If you want to listen again to the show, you can use the smartphone application iblog.com and search Inside Out or visit insideout.iblog.com. For more information about each week's program, visit our TBS EFM website, tbsefm.seoul.kr.
Welcome back to TBS EFM's Inside Out. Our guest today, Professor Charles Montgomery. Professor Montgomery, we were talking about the shift in translation, and there have been many shifts. One of them, of course, the most important point being perhaps the shift from academia to the shift of consumption, you know,
right.
turning it into a product to sell and to make money. I did a little bit of preparation for our discussion today, just a little, and I stumbled across something you had said, or at least was attributed to you, and I think I'm paraphrasing here, but it's about another challenge of translation and paraphrasing, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe you didn't say this, challenges of translation include thematic challenges.
Oh, yeah.
You did say that? What did you mean by that?
Thematic challenges, because if you look at a place like Korea, Korea starts from Confucius and Buddha.
Yes.
And if you look at a place like the West, the English language, it starts from Aristotle and Plato.
Mm-hmm.
And the ways of thinking and the themes they choose are entirely different based on, this is an unfair simplification, but a logical versus a relationship based way of looking at stories.
Mm-hmm.
So when we read stories in the West, we tend to read very linearly.
Mm-hmm.
When we read stories in Korean, we tend to read very thematically. So
okay.
a story like Descendants of Cain by Hwang Soon-won, the theme in it is unclear. Because of this difference, the real themes in it are unclear because as Western readers, the first time we read it, we don't understand this is taking place in this environment where there still is a slight difference between the Yongpan and the common people.
Okay.
And there is this revolution going on. So there are themes that Koreans, the minute they start reading that book, they
mm-hmm.
recognize those themes are in there.
Mm-hmm.
When we start reading those books as Western readers, those themes just fly straight over our heads.
Right, right, right.
And oftentimes, in that particular book, for instance, the man and the woman are clearly in love. One
yes.
of the themes is a love story.
Yep.
And that's the theme we see. And so we spend 180 or however many pages going, could you two just have a Hollywood clinch and then roses and then it ends?
Right.
And so, yeah, there are thematic and stylistic
mm-hmm.
differences, too. I mean, there are when the buckwheats bloom, when the buckwheats bloom, the season's buckwheat bloom, it's
mm-hmm.
been translated variously, is another story. The theme of that story, when you read it in Korean, is the sort of the changing of time, the cycles of time,
okay.
the generational shift. When you read that in English, you recognize it immediately as the story of a father and son who are refusing to recognize overtly that they are father and son.
Right.
And again, you just want to bang their heads together because you're looking at a different theme in
right.
exactly the same story that a Korean looks in and sees oh, the buckwheats are blooming, the seasons are changing, the father has met the son, they're going back. So
right.
themes sometimes are the hardest things to get across because
yeah.
they're so deeply embedded in
sure.
culture. And maybe the best example, the challenge I throw out for all of these is anybody tell me, find me a Korean anti-hero.
Korean anti-hero. Well, I certainly couldn't because I don't know very much about literature in general or Korean literature more specifically.
Well, they just don't exist because it, thematically in Korean literature, almost all the time, the themes, even if it's a theme of diaspora,
uh-huh.
the desire is to get back together.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas in Western literature, Humphrey Bogart doesn't yeah. want to get back together with
sure.
anybody.
You want to be the rebel without
yeah,
a cause.
Yeah, you want to be the guy in the black hat with right. the gun. And the, so these thematic differences actually come in there in a big way. And so one of the issues of translation that arises from that is if you are translating for academia, mm-hmm. fine, translate those ones that have the thematic issues but explain them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're translating for consumption, as you put it,
yep.
translate something like Please Look After Mom, in which the theme of love for mother is so universal that nobody can miss it, or a book like No One Writes Back by Jung Eun-jin, which is a book about a boy, a man, and his dog on their last mm. road trip,
yeah.
which is a theme. There's a lot of Korean themes in it,
sure.
but there's also that main theme that a Western reader can just hook
connect.
On to.
Yeah, right.
And then the good thing that happens is if you find one of these books that you can just fall into, like Photoshop Murder by Kim Young-ha or No One Writes Back by Jung Eun-jin, then you read another one, then you understand a little bit more about the culture. Then each book you read, this problem of theme, idiom, all of these problems start to drop away. They never go away entirely, but you understand more and more what you're reading, and it makes more and more sense within the other culture that
right.
you're reading it in.
Well, you know, it's certainly a matter of perspective, really, and that perspective comes from, you know, where you were raised. It's the old environment, nature-nurture sort
right.
of argument. And I guess that does play out also in literature, and then especially in literature in translation. Another interesting aspect of that, and maybe somewhat connected when we talk about nature-nurture, is that there are several sort of sites of literary importance around, well, anywhere where there's literature. But, of course, we're talking about the Korean context here. You've visited many of these these sites of literary importance around Korea. Can you maybe tell our listeners today what are some of those sites and maybe your impressions of them?
I've tried to pretty much go to as many sites as I can find. There's the Kim Yu-jong literary site is just on the way to Chuncheon. It's the last stop.
Up
there.
Are these typically places where maybe novels or literature was set, or are these the birthplaces of authors? I mean, what kind of places are these?
They're both of those things, in fact. Kim Yu-jong wrote about sort of urban dwellings, and so his is out. It's not in Chuncheon. It's actually in the sort of Shigol, just like the
yeah,
city
the countryside,
side,
yeah.
outside. If you go see the Park Mokgwol and Kim Dong-ni, which uh-huh. is the one I would recommend.
Okay.
If I have to recommend
can
one.
Can you give us that name
yeah.
again?
Park Mokgwol,
okay.
who is a poet,
mm-hmm.
and Kim Dong-ni,
okay.
who is a both very famous within Korea, and Kim Dong-ni, who is a writer, is my favorite, partly as a cheat, because it's down by Gyeongju.
Okay,
so it's
well,
in
that's
the old,
a nice area.
Yeah,
maybe
it's
we'll
a beautiful area.
Yeah.
yeah, exactly. You can go see the Sokoram Grotto. But it's also a really interesting one, because one was a poet, one was an author, they were best friends, they lived
oh.
together, they lived
wow.
at the same time, not lived together like
gotcha.
They lived at the same time, they worked very much on the same themes. If my understanding is correct, when they moved to Seoul at the same time. They're very, very, very much linked. And as you go around the city,
yep.
you find various shrines, pagodas, and whatnot located to dedicated to them.
Right.
So the Park Mokgwol and Kim Dong-ni, and actually the second time I visited Korea, I could recognize the word Moon Hakwan. And I was on my way to the Sokoram Grotto. I had rented the taxi driver for the day.
Okay.
And I couldn't tell him why. I could just say Moon Hakwan. But as we passed it, I just kept yelling, Moon Hakwan, Moon Hakwan, Moon
right.
Hakwan. And I actually made him stop on the way down. And he had no idea why I would do such a thing, because no tourist cared.
Right.
The other thing I should say about those, most of them, zero English.
Those authors?
At those museums and literary
at
places.
The centers. Yeah, yeah.
At the centers.
Gotcha.
Basically no English. You
well,
have
there's another job for you and your organization.
Oh, good Lord. I retire. So it's best to have some knowledge. Before you go to those, it's
Julie
best to have some knowledge of the authors and their works.
Sure. Sure. Well, that's a good footnote, and pardon the pun there. Yeah. We talked about trying to get rid of footnotes, but that's an important one. And it maybe harkens back to also what we said, that, you know, even if you can't understand what you're reading, it really only takes a couple of hours to mm-hmm. learn how to read the Korean alphabet.
Right.
And I think the Korean expression is even a fool can learn it in 2 hours
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Yeah, I say that's true for most prosaic things, but not the literature, because Korean literature places a premium on style, and some of the styles are extremely difficult to read.
But at least if you're going to these places and you can read the signs and you can find them at
tell
the very least.
Tell a taxi driver. Right, exactly. Right. Just see something I recognize in Korean and then be able to reproduce its sound to the taxi driver.
And know it when you're seeing it. So don't be sort of dismayed or dissuaded about not being able to go there because there's no English there. At least you'll get there and, you know, you'll have the experience of having been there. Now, of course, Hangul Day celebrated just a few days ago on Thursday, and also around that time, it's the announcements for the Nobel Prize.
Right.
And it seems that every year around Nobel Prize time, there's talk, especially when we talk about Korean literature, of a very well-known Korean poet, and you've mentioned his name already, Go Eun.
Yes.
Didn't win the Nobel Prize again this year.
Mm-hmm.
But is often thought to be Korea's best hope for a Nobel Prize. I'd like to ask you your opinions. Is he indeed Korea's best hope for a Nobel Prize? And more importantly, does it matter?
That's a complicated question. However, the first part is simple. Yes, he is the current hope for the Nobel Prize in Literature for Korea.
Yeah.
Partly because he has been extremely international. When he was Buddhist, practicing Buddhist, he went around the world and he gave readings at any place he could, any Buddhist place he could. He still does. He's a really entertaining reader of his own work. In fact, Brother Anthony has said, to understand Go Eun, even if you don't understand Korean, you have to watch him read it in Korean to understand his passion for what he's writing about. Does the award matter? It matters in a way. It matters just in that it would bring recognition to Korean literature.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a bit worried about it. This sounds terrible, but I'm a bit worried about it because Koreans look at things like the Nobel Prize as the gold prize.
Yeah.
And Koreans love to win the big prize.
Sure.
Korea basically outpunches its weight.
Mm-hmm. Punches
above its weight in most things in the world.
Yep.
And that's the Nobel Prize. So my fear would be if Go Eun won the Nobel Prize, that then basically the Korean government would declare victory, pose LTI Korea, and say, we've won literature. And so, and then my second fear is that, there's going to be a generational gap.
Mm.
After Go Eun and maybe Hwang Seok-yong and a couple of other authors who are alive now, there's a 10 or 20 year gap of writers who haven't been translated. There's the new generation coming along strong.
Right.
Maybe Shin Kyung-suk and Kim Yong-ha are examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
But in a certain way, it's now, not now or never, but in my mind, it's now or a decade or two off as far as Korean literature goes. Or somebody is going to have to pick a Korean author and really get going on translating them. Because what you have to do to win a Nobel Prize is you have to be old.
Yep.
Nobel Prize committee will not pick people who are going to change their mind.
Yeah.
it's better if you've been political.
Mm-hmm.
It's better if you've been political, if you look at the written politically.
Right.
It's also statistically better if you're a male.
Okay.
And you also have to have a lot of work translated into languages that are read by the judges. If the judges have not read any of the works, you won't be in there.
Right.
So those are the four things Korea needs to work on. And I think in that sense, Go Eun really fits the profile.
Mm.
He really is head and shoulders above any other Korean writer or poet at this point in terms of chance for Nobel Prize. Of course, every country has one of those.
Yeah, that's true too.
Someone like that. So it's you can never tell.
But, you know, if I were a betting man, and actually I am a betting man, I would put money on it happening eventually, because Korea is enjoying its moment in the sun.
Mm.
All things Korean, seemingly, you know, movies, dramas, literature, food, really everything. And so I think that it's going to come. I hope that it's going to come. But I also do agree with you that if it does come, there is maybe then the danger of perhaps resting on one's laurels.
Exactly. Well, it absolutely positively will come. People, when they talk about books, they try incorrectly to compare it to the Korean wave.
Mm-hmm.
Korean wave being, in my mind, being drama, movie, and K-pop.
Yep.
The Korean wave comes and goes.
Right? Like a wave.
It is a wave. Each year it's a different movie. Each year it's a different song. Each year it's a different idol group. Then they go away. Then something comes to replace it. Literature is more like absorption. It's the water that's left behind on the land. Mm. Those books stay in libraries. People keep reading them.
Right.
Please Look After Mom is always going to show up on Amazon as a recommendation if you look at an Amy Tan book.
Right.
So it's through that process and just kind of internalizing in the minds of foreigners, a word I'm not that fond of, but internalizing in the mind of foreigners that there are good Korean authors in general, yep, that will then start foreigners thinking about specific authors. And then, even if it's not Go-un, it will be someone.
Well, exactly right. You raise an interesting point in that there might be this gap because there are a lot of authors now that are being translated, but some of the new and upcoming writers maybe are not. Or is it also the fact that maybe there are not enough new and upcoming writers? And that's the question I'd like to ask you, not focusing so much on translation, but just on the creation of literature. Is there anything that Korea can do to help cultivate better writers?
That's a really interesting one. And my main thing would be get rid of the prize system as it currently exists.
Interesting.
Because the prize system, for those who don't know, you have to win a new literature prize to become an author and to get published.
Interesting.
And that means you have to be chosen. So something like 50 Shades of Grey, mm-hmm, which was a massive hit, or yes, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo,
yeah,
which was a massive hit. And by the way, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo opened the United Kingdom, mm-hmm, to all the literature of that country. Now, but that's simply not possible in Korea because you have to be a...
Isn't that interesting?
So that, I would change that. That would be the very first thing I would change in order to increase it. I think the new writers are there. Mm-hmm. I think what happened was for a long time, translation was done of representative, in quotation marks, mm-hmm, Korean works. Mm-hmm. And that, so that tended to be older, more established,
right,
writers.
Yeah.
And I don't think that people stopped writing for 10 or 30 years.
Sure.
But I think it's just in the last 4 or 5 years that LTI Korea, Taesun Foundation, publishers have realized, hang on, let's start translating our young authors now because we can build the base for,
exactly,
those authors as time goes on.
Right. Well, that's I think both sides of that coin are very, very important, and let's certainly hope that that happens. We sort of got into that part of the conversation by talking about the Nobel Prize, which, of course, was recently announced. Another thing that will be announced somewhat recently from today is the Honorary Seoul Citizenship.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago, you received one of those.
Yes, in fact, I did.
So tell us about your time as an honorary citizen of Seoul.
Well, I never felt so out of place in my life as at that ceremony because I was with people who I understood why they deserved it.
Right.
It does a really interesting thing. In terms of practical effect, not that much. You get a card that says that you can go into any free event,
yeah,
at Seoul.
Right.
But the Ajumma and Ajashi who are at the events have never
that.
Seen them.
Right,
yeah,
right,
so they're
right,
like,
right.
Now you're going to pay your money. What it really does is something like this. It just increases, when you become an honorary citizen of Seoul, your profile increases. So whatever the projects you are on, become more important. And it may be coincidental and it may not be coincidental that my formal relationship with LTI Korea, mm-hmm, on the Wikipedia project came after.
Yeah.
It makes it much easier for Korean institutions,
sure,
to say, look, this makes,
yep,
sense. This guy
that's right.
An honor. So, and also it's just been a really nice link with the city government.
Well, I would certainly concur that it gives you some clout, and that clout then can help you do what you want to do. One of the things you want to do is promote Korean literature. I'd say you've done it very well, and we thank you for coming on our program to help do that today. Our guest today has been Charles Montgomery, writer, editor, and professor at Dongguk University. And we do also have a song request that you're going to be making. It's something new that we're doing here on Inside Out these days. What's your song, Professor?
Well, I just thought as I was thinking about this, that one of the great things that Hangul did was it allowed women to actually get into literature. So I have chosen Girls Talk by Elvis Costello.
Well, here it is, Girls Talk by Elvis Costello. Thanks again for joining us. To you, Professor Montgomery, and to you, the listeners, we invite you to join us again next Saturday at 9:05 for more of TBS EFM's Inside Out. Here it is, Elvis Costello, Girls Talk.